Hey guys, it's Albert. We're going to kick things off by wrapping up my 21-day, 20-team training camp trip. I'm going to take you through the last six teams I saw. The Raiders, the Redskins, the Panthers, the Bills, the Bucks, the Dolphins. You'll get all of that here. And via Periscope, I'll answer all of your NFL questions. Let's go. All right, welcome in Periscope. You are looking live at my home office. It is about 8:30 Eastern on Wednesday, August the 14th. My training camp swing is done. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. I'll probably go out and see a few more teams later in August, but so far, 21 days, 20 teams. I'm taking a little bit of a life break over the next 4 or 5 days. Got a pretty major life event coming up. But I'm here to answer all of your questions on everything that I've seen over the course of training camp. The last time we did a podcast, we got through my trip to Napa. So I want to talk a little bit off the top about the teams that I've seen since then. And at that point, I had just seen the Cardinals. I had just seen the Niners. I had just seen the Cowboys. I had just seen the Rams. And so we're going to start with the last leg of the first swing of my camp trip, and then about the five teams that I was able to go and see this week. My one observation from each of those teams, then I'll answer all of your questions. Anything you got training camp-wise, again, we'll answer it here on the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. And I'm going to start again in Napa with the Oakland Raiders. And by the way, I'm going to bring in a beer here because we do this during the season, and the season's almost here. This is the 87. This is the 87 Night Shift Brewing. It's a American Double IPA. So I'm going to crack that open right now, and we're going to get to the business of going through each of these training camps and then getting into all of your questions. And so the first camp, we're going to get to the Oakland Raiders. The one thing that stuck out to me, having been there last year, there was a little bit, there was definitely a just mishmash in that organization. And you sort of had your Reggie guys and you had your Gruden guys. And when you talked to Gruden during camp last year, one of the things you noticed was he would keep saying how much work they had to do and how this wasn't right and how that wasn't right. And when Antonio Brown's name came up during our conversation, the one thing that I noticed, there were no excuses. There was no shot at the player. There was no saying, well, this is this guy or that. No. It was all like, Antonio Brown is my guy. The guys who are here, they're my guys. The tone sounds different. And I think that was really reflected when everything blew up last weekend. You get to Saturday after that game, and John Gruden gave his 100% support for Antonio Brown. To me, what that says, John Gruden knows that move, and every move now, is on him, and that team is his. And so he's got some of the veteran guys in there. Some of the guys they took risks on, Vontaze Burfict, Richie Incognito, Antonio Brown. I think so much of where that team is going to go is going to hinge on where some of the young guys go. You know, your guys from last year's draft class, PJ Hall, Colton Miller, Maurice Hurst, and then this year's draft class, no question about it, is a vital one for the franchise, given that you've got the Amari Cooper pick in there, you've got one of the Khalil Mack picks in there, and so it's guys like Jonathan Abram, it's guys like Josh Jacobs, it's guys like Cleveland Farrell, it's also guys further down the line like Foster Moreau, like Hunter Renfrow, that are going to, I think, have a huge hand in how the John Gruden era plays out in Oakland. All right, so then I went home for the weekend for that first set of preseason games back out. I saw the Washington Redskins on Sunday, and I just tell you this, there's a lot of pressure on a lot of people there. There's a young quarterback in the building. There is one thing that I sort of noticed was how there's a group of older players there. And Jay Gruden brought this up to me when we talked, how Landon Collins isn't here to develop a quarterback. Landon Collins is here to win now. And you start to look at the names that are on the roster there, guys like Adrian Peterson, guys like Josh Norman. It's just, it really is at this point a little bit of an older roster. Trent Williams would be in that category if he was still around. And so you look at the roster, you look at some of the older guys, Vernon Davis is another one, and really there are a lot of people there, that'd be my one observation, but a lot of people there that are really now in win now mode, and they've got to make a quarterback decision here that I think is going to have an effect on the franchise going forward. And so I think the question becomes, do you do what's right for the franchise? Is it right for the franchise to have Dwayne Haskins take his lumps now? Or is it right for the franchise to start a Colt McCoy, start Case Keenum, and just see what happens? So what Jay Gruden told me was that the Case and Colt are ahead at this point. That's to be expected. They're veteran players. Case has more experience in the NFL. Colt has more experience in the system and in the NFL. But the right thing to do in a lot of these cases is start the young quarterback, have the young quarterback take his lumps. And so it's just interesting that there's sort of competing things there where I think on some of the players' side, it might make more sense to have the veteran in there so they can compete now. You know, a guy like Landon Collins who decided to sign there, the older guys, Vernon Davis, Adrian Peterson, Josh Norman. But then it might be best for the franchise, again, or it might be best for those guys to have Colt or Case start. It might be best for the franchise to have Dwayne Haskins in there and take his lumps now. From Washington, I went to Carolina, saw the Panthers, had a chance to sit down with Cam Newton for a while. And, you know, I think my big observation from Carolina, a lot of things are in place there. I think the defense will be good again. Ron Rivera is confident in his ability to call it. And they've still got some really good players on that side of the ball. Luke Kuechly, Shaq Thompson, KK Short. In the secondary, Eric Reed has emerged as a leader for them. I think they think they're going to get a lot out of Dante Jackson. They got players on defense. They've got players on offense, too. They've retrofitted that offensive line, and obviously the skill positions are really good there with guys like DJ Moore and Christian McCaffrey and Curtis Samuel. The question, I think, is sort of on where the offense is and if they can pick up where they left off last year. And some of the things that they were doing earlier in the year, it's easy to forget how good they were offensively for the first 6 or 7 weeks of the season before Cam Newton got hurt. Cam Newton gets hurt, everything changes. And I think that would sort of apply to any team. Your quarterback gets hurt, everything does change for you. So can they pick up where they left off early in the year? And just talking to Cam, I know it was heartbreaking for him seeing all the progress that he made kind of go up in smoke when he got hurt. But he feels really confident about where he is. I think he's got the right coaching with Norv and Scott Turner right now. And if they can just pick up where they left off last year with some of the creative things they were doing to get the most not only out of Cam, but also out of guys like Christian McCaffrey and DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel, they could wind up being, like, I think, a Super Bowl sleeper. So to me, it's like where that offensive scheme is and how it works for Cam is could be the difference between 8-8, 9-7, and maybe a 12-4 or 13-3 year. From Carolina, I actually saw the Buffalo Bills. I didn't get a chance to see them practice, but I did go and visit with some of their people. And to me, what's so interesting about Buffalo is the method of building and how now they're relying on a bunch of their homegrown guys to recreate what happened 2 years ago. Now, remember, they made the playoffs in year one for Sean McDermott. They come back in year two, and they decided to rip the Band-Aid off. They had all of this dead cap money they had to take care of that was built up through the Rex Ryan, Doug Whaley era. And so they ripped the Band-Aid off. They carry a bunch of dead money. They draft a young quarterback, and they say, this is our year. We're going to go through it. And they go through it. And so now you look where they have a bunch of young guys that they think can develop into blue-chip players. And I'm talking about your Tremaine Edmonds. Now you're Ed Oliver in there. Josh Allen, of course. There's obviously some disagreement about where his potential is, but they obviously believe that he can be a blue-chip player. The Buffalo Bills have a chance right now with the capital they built up, with I think what's going on inside of that building, with what they've done to sort of build up a strong middle class of free agents, and Mitch Morris, who's hurt right now, but was a solid addition at center, John Brown and Cole Beasley at receiver. The Bills have got a lot going for them. And if they hit on these draft picks, if they hit on guys like Josh Allen and Tremaine Edmonds and Ed Oliver, I think there's a chance for them to really take off. Because we saw what Sean McDermott can do with a solid group 2 years ago. From Carolina, I wound up going to the joint practices of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Miami Dolphins. And what struck me about Tampa, to begin with the Bucs, how all in they are on 2019. Jameis Winston's in a contract year. Bruce Arians comes in and like explicitly told me, like, Jameis Winston was a motivator for me to come back. The chance to work with him was a motivator. On paper, he looks like he's a really good fit for what Bruce Arians wants to do offensively. They've got the right group of receivers. there and Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and Breshad Perriman, all guys who are sort of big downfield targets. And then defensively, adding Devin White, I think they believe that that's going to bring some things together. They couldn't be much worse than they were on defense. So I think what's so interesting, Jason Light's been there now. This is year six for him. He's been building the talent base up. You bring in Bruce Arians. You've got a quarterback in a contract year. If this doesn't work out in 2019, then we're talking about starting over maybe in a couple different ways. And so what struck me about the Bucs was how they're all in for 2019. And then you get the Miami Dolphins, and they're on the opposite end of the spectrum. This is a slow build. They have been very deliberate. They're loaded with 2020 draft capital. They've like basically built some flexibility into their cap for this year and are going to have a lot of cap flexibility going forward. And so I think that they're preparing for an up and down year with a young team. And I'm going to be really interested to see what happens with the Josh Rosen, Ryan Fitzpatrick thing, because I think that'll tell you a little bit about where they're at. If they don't go with Rosen, and right now Fitzpatrick is in the lead for that job, gaps closed a little bit in the last week, but if they do decide to go with Fitzpatrick over Rosen, I think that tells you you're probably right back in the Tua Herbert from market for 2020. And so I believe in a lot of the things that Chris Greer's done to try to build that thing the right way, do it methodically. I think if Brian Flores can sell the way that he's doing things, and it seems like he's getting buy-in, then that way still works. It's just harder to sell that on young players now. So if he can do that and he has the personality to sell it, they've got a lot of things going for them. And so you look at the quarterback situation, and if Rosen winds up being the guy of the future, then they've got so much capital next year just to play with. If not, you know, then they're in the Tua Herbert sweepstakes. So that seems to me like it's the one thing that's really big that's on the line for them going into 2019. All right, we got a ton of time for you here. I'll go 15 or 20 minutes if the questions warrant and everything else. Happy to answer anything that you guys got for me. Go ahead, shoot. I'll answer all your questions right here with my 87 beer. Are the Raiders the dumpster fire they appear to be on Hard Knocks? I don't think it's even close to what it was last year. Last year, again, I think you had things mishmashed together, and they've got more buy-in now. And a lot of that is based on the fact that the guys who are in charge brought a lot of the players in. What do you think about Marquise Haynes? You know, somebody who was brought up to me by a couple of Panthers people is a really good fit for what Ron Rivera wants to do. Ron's going to run a Wade Phillips-style 3-4 defense. Haynes played that sort of role as an outside linebacker in college. They've got some depth there now with guys like Brian Burns and Mario Addison, and Marquise Haynes obviously would add another level to that if he is who they think he is. Luck injury, I don't know. I don't think the Colts really know. This is something that's been a strange injury, a weird injury, the way that it's evolved. All I can tell you, Andrew Luck told me 3 weeks ago, 2.5 weeks ago, that it was his ankle. And it just sort of stuck out to me because everybody at the time was reporting it as a calf. I think he's been dealing with a couple things for a while. And what's interesting about it is a lot of the mechanical changes he's made working with Tom House have been aimed at trying to stay healthy, using your whole body, being balanced, all that different stuff. So I look at it and I see Andrew Luck as a guy who's really focused on trying to fix all these things. And the fact that he's here has got to be enormously frustrating. Thanks for the condolences on Don. Don was a great guy. Thought the world of him. Thoughts with his family, obviously, still. Was that a night shift beer? Yes, it's a night shift beer. There you go, the 87. Is Clowney on the block? Here's what I would tell you about Jadeveon Clowney. Right now, I think the Texans would move him for the right offer. What I can tell you is that in March and April, there were teams that believed that if they gave the Texans a second-round pick, they would be able to get him out of there. It's different now because now we're past the July 15th deadline to sign franchise tag players to long-term deals. What does that mean? Well, that means that if you trade for him, you have no ability to sign him until your season's over. If you get to the end of your season, then there's really not a lot of motivation for him to do a long-term deal with anybody because he's going to be either in a position to be franchise tagged again at 120% of what he makes this year, which would be somewhere between $18 and $21 million, or hit the open market. And so what you're talking about is training for a player who'd be coming in without much of a training camp, if any training camp at all, and somebody who you have no ability to re-sign long-term and who will have leverage over you come January or February. Can the Texans get a second-round pick for that? I don't know. I don't think so. Maybe they can. It depends on, you know, certain things playing out over the course of the league. But over the course of the summer in the league, I think it'd be hard to get a second round pick for that. And then, you know, if you're the Texans, you look at it and say, well, we can just get the year out of him and then let him go after the year and get the comp pick in return. When is Zeke showing up? My guess is Zeke would show up before the first game. I still think they probably get a deal done. What team's in on Clowney? Nobody to my knowledge right now. That could change, of course. Mecole Hardman, gadget or integral part on offense. I think he was going to be an integral part on offense had Tyreek Hill not been available. Now that Tyreek Hill will be available, I do not think that he'll – I think he'll be more of a gadget guy. The nice thing about Mecole Hardman is that they can use him every which way. When I was there, it was really clear. Like, they'll be able to line him up in the backfield. They'll be able to use him on jet sweeps, reverses, and they'll be able to throw him the ball. So he's got some of that Tyreek Hill versatility. Best defensive coordinator in the league. I mean, I guess you can still say Vic Fangio. He's the one who all the offensive coaches say was most difficult to go against. Kerryon Johnson, breakout year. The Lions really believe that having C.J. Anderson in that room is going to help Kerryon Johnson. And the other thing that should help Kerryon Johnson would be a better version of Matt Stafford. He's taken a couple days off the last few days. The Lions, I think the Lions believe that they've got things fitted for Matthew Stafford a little better than they have in the past. Stafford likes big, long targets. They go out and get him, T.J. Hockenson and Jesse James. Obviously, they've already got Kenny Golladay on in-house. They also feel like the offensive line is going to be better specifically for Stafford. You got to block for each quarterback in a different way. And I don't think the current staff thought that that was happening before for Stafford. Under Jeff Davidson, they've tried to make that happen. And so we could get a different version of Matthew Stafford this year. Remember, like, the Saints do some unique things for Drew Brees. I think we'll see the Lions trying to do some unique things for Matt Stafford. And then, again, they got those big, long targets for him. So if that passing game comes alive, it'd be a great thing for Kerryon Johnson. It would be much easier for him to put up the sort of numbers everybody thinks he's capable of in that sort of scenario. Three landing spots for Trent Williams. I mean, I guess you would go Cleveland, Houston, maybe the Chargers would be like a dark horse if Russell Okung's situation isn't any better in a couple weeks. Melvin Gordon update. I don't anticipate the Chargers moving much on Melvin Gordon. They made what they feel like is a very fair offer. I can't imagine that they move much off of that. Goff comes back to earth in 2019. I think Jared Goff's one of the more interesting stories in the league in 2019. I don't know what to expect from Todd Gurley. I think that this is going to be sort of a wait and see thing as we go into September. And so there could be more on Jared Goff in the early parts of the season. And I think everybody who watches the NFL understands that those things have an effect on a quarterback. When he's carrying a heavier burden to carry the offense, it can change who he is as a player. Why does Jacksonville have a team? Well, Jacksonville has a team because the NFL believed Jacksonville was going to be the next Atlanta, and that didn't happen. And so they projected growth in that city. Didn't happen. Bill's going to cut Shady McCoy. I don't think they'll cut him. I do think the Bills are going to get trade calls on running backs because people are starting to realize that Devin Singletary has the potential to be a bell cow in the NFL. And now the Bills, with T.J. Yeldon there, with Frank Gore there, with Shady there, with Devin there, really have pretty good depth. Chad Kelly better than Jacoby Brissett. I'm not ready to say that yet. Jacoby Brissett's been pretty good for them, even though he's struggled a little bit. Why is the Ohio State University trying to trademark the marketing and money? That's why, and because we can. Who is this year's version of Ebron at tight end? I don't know. Tyler Eifert, maybe, right? He's got a break. I love Tyler Eifert's talents. Horrible the way his career's gone. What do you think about AB? I would say the big lesson to take from the whole AB thing is at that age, you are what you are as a player, and money only makes you more of what you already were. And AB has been this guy forever. Little things have always set him off. And I think it was the combination of the foot thing and the helmet thing that drove him away. The Raiders very much know what they signed up for here, which I think is why John Gruden was so supportive of him post-game Saturday, because he knows this one is on him. What kind of year do you think Sony Michel will have? Depends on health. I think he'd be a very good running back, potentially a bell cow, but they drafted Damian Harris for a reason because you can't count on that. Is Witten going to be legit good? That much I don't know. He told me when I talked to him at camp a couple weeks or last week that that he felt like himself. We'll see how he holds up over the course of the year. Packers thoughts on LaFleur, the defense, and Rodgers. I like where they are defensively. I think loading up on edge rushers and on corners is really going to fit what Mike Pettine wants to do there. Jair Alexander's got a chance to be, I've said this before. I've said this over the last couple of weeks, top five corner in the league. And then to load up at the edges with, you know, Za'Darius Smith, Preston Smith, Rashawn Gary, they've got a chance to be a menace on passing downs. The question is going to be how good they are on rundowns and whether or not they hold up the middle, but on the edges, they're really, really good, which gives them a chance to unlock all the creativity that Mike Pettine brings to the table. Pittsburgh Super Bowl long shot. I wouldn't call them a long shot. Will Derek Carr return to MVP form this year? I think Derek Carr is going to be better than people think this year. Pollard going to give the Cowboys any benefit? Yeah, I think Pollard is ideally going to be your sub back, going to be the guy who catches the ball out of the backfield and does a lot of different things. He was impressive the day I was there. I know they're really high on him. They're probably pumping him up a little bit more than is warranted, you know, to try to play the whole leverage game with Zeke. But I think he's got a chance to contribute even if Zeke's in there in September. Who's making the jump this year? I gave you Jair Alexander. Here's another one for you. Christian Kirk with the Arizona Cardinals, clearly their best receiver over the course of this offseason. Under the radar, fantasy options, any positions, name a few. Let me think about that and I'll get back to you. Coaches on the hot seat this year. Jason Garrett's one because he's in a contract year. Another would be Jay Gruden. I talked to him about this the other day, like that he really feels like this is just part of the job. Like that, you know, he's said, my dad was a coach. My brother's a coach. We've all been fired. We understand it. We have to win now. Bradley Chubb, 13 plus sacks, potentially having Von Miller on the other side and Vic Fangio as your defensive coordinator doesn't help. Do the Jets move Adams to cornerback? I've seen a little bit of that. The trend with safeties these days, we've seen it with Malcolm Jenkins in Philadelphia, is to toggle them a little bit between the nickel corner spot and their safety positions. I could certainly see that happening with what Greg Williams does defensively. Does Kyler Murray have the same upside as Cam Baker, Deshaun in their rookie years? Yes, I think one of the more interesting things that's sort of flown under the radar going into the year is what the Cardinals are going to look like. And we've seen teams take advantage of the element of surprise in the past. In 2012, we saw it with the Eagles. In 2012, we saw it with the Niners. In 2011, we saw it with the Broncos. In 2013, we saw it with the Eagles. The Cardinals are that team right now. People are chasing ghosts as far as what to expect from them, looking at Texas Tech film, trying to figure out and project what Cliff Kingsbury is going to do. Kyler Murray's got the athleticism and the arm talent to play in the NFL at a high level. That addition of the element of mystery, I think, helps him too. Brady off to a slow start this year. I think it's more likely if Brady's going to struggle that we see at the end of the year. We saw some of that in November, December last year. Best wide receiver in the game, DeAndre Hopkins right now. Will Minkah Fitzpatrick be the Swiss Army knife of the Finns defense? He should be that player. Like, and we've seen what Brian Flores was able to do with movable pieces at safety in New England, most notably Patrick Chung. That Patrick Chung role could be an interesting one for Minkah Fitzpatrick, especially because he's got some experience playing corner, which would allow him to cover slot receivers and tight ends. Kenyon Drake, that's one of the pleasant surprises for the Dolphins out of training camp, has been how their running backs have performed. I know Kenyon Drake got nicked up the other day, but Drake and Kalen Ballage have been really, really good. Well, the Texans upgrade at left tackle. I think if the opportunity came along, they would look at it. They've already given up their three to go and get Duke Johnson. Giving up more draft capital, it's easy to question whether or not they should do something like that. But, I mean, if Matt Coyle gets hurt and his body's sort of a ticking time bomb, like, then are you comfortable with Titus Howard playing left tackle? I think that's where you probably have to look at somebody like Trent Williams coming in. And remember, a lot of times when you see these huge payments, these huge draft hauls going for players, it's because something else failed. And, like, you want to look back at in 2016 – the Eagles trade Sam Bradford for the Vikings. Well, the Eagles weren't getting a first-round pick for Sam Bradford unless something weird happened, and that was Teddy Bridgewater getting hurt. Last year, why did the Raiders finally get a first-round pick, or actually wind up getting a first-round pick for Amari Cooper? It was because the post-Dez Bryant Cowboys receiver group didn't work out the way that Stephen Jones and Jerry Jones thought it would. And so a lot of times these things are sort of products of desperation. And it's just that is where, you know, the Texans could be in a few weeks. Who knows? Clowney to the Bills. I don't think so. Daryl Henderson overhyped. I think that there's like they like Daryl Henderson. I will tell you this, like, they like the player beyond just like needing depth at that position. They really like the player. Like, Sean McVay really liked Daryl Henderson as a weapon and thought he was a good fit for what they do offensively. So they didn't, that wasn't like a swing at a player to try to get insurance on Todd Gurley so much as it was they really did like the player. And so I think they'll have a plan for him, and I think he'll contribute right away. Did you see the Jets? Not yet, but I'm happy to answer your questions on them. Why not pay Dak out through his contract and franchise him 2 years for under $30 million? You could do that. I mean, I think part of the problem is, do you think that'll have an effect on him? Do you think that'll have an effect on your team? I think you'd rather have him taken care of. And to me, it's like, if you take care of him right now, 2 years tops three will have guaranteed money in them. So if you take care of him now, I mean, if it doesn't work out, you're going to have a chance to get out of it 2021 or 2022. Confident in John Brown this year. I like the fit there. I like the plan to have up and down weapons there. I'm going to answer your Bosa question in a second. Having weapons over the top in John Brown, Robert Foster, having guys underneath like Cole Beasley. I like what the Bills have done just planning-wise and bringing in some of those middle-class type receivers. Somebody asked, how did Bosa look when I was out there? He looked awesome. There were a couple points where Mike McGlinchey looked like he was ready to throw his helmet. He was so frustrated trying to block Bosa. Joe Staley, same type of thing. Like, he's been tough on Joe Staley. He was tough on both those guys. And it's a shame he got hurt, because what all those coaches were saying was, this is a guy who doesn't stay blocked. The one thing that was more encouraging out of it from a global standpoint for the Niners, they looked really competitive on both lines of scrimmage. And if that's the case, I mean, we've seen it from the Rams, we've seen it from the Saints, we've seen it from the Eagles, we've seen it from all these teams that have invested in the lines of scrimmage. That's a recipe for making a big leap. And San Francisco could make a big leap based on the infrastructure they built along the lines of scrimmage. Who leads the San Fran backfield? Tevin Coleman's done a nice job there. How good is Terry McLaurin? Terry McLaurin, at the very least, is going to be an excellent special teams player as a rookie. And they love his toughness. They love his speed. They love his versatility. You couldn't walk 20 feet without running into a coach who'd tell you something about Terry McLaurin at Redskins practice. So they're very, very high on him. Would Douglas have signed/franchised Jason Myers? I don't think so. How good is David Johnson? David Johnson is very good. Sort of depends on where he's at from an injury standpoint. Did you go to Saints Chargers joint practice? No, but I saw both those teams. Thoughts on Matt Patricia? The organization is better aligned than it was a year ago. There's no question about that. He's got more of his guys in there. I think there's more buy-in in the locker room. Does that mean wins? I don't know. I would just tell you that I think that there's a better level of alignment within that organization right now. Cooper Kupp looked back to form. He does. He's going to be pushed for work by Josh Reynolds, though. Mark my words on that. Josh Reynolds has had a really, really nice camp, building on some of the playing time he got last year. Offensive Rookie of the Year. I wouldn't be surprised if it was Kyler Murray, just because I think he's going to have such great opportunity to put up numbers. It's almost never an offensive lineman. If it was ever going to be an offensive lineman, it would have been Quentin Nelson last year. Just trying to think of who else would be in the mix. Josh Jacobs is going to have a ton of opportunity too. Mike Williams finally break out for the Chargers. They really like where he's at. Atlanta Falcons. So interesting just because the amount of turnover on the coaching staff. New offensive coordinator, really two new offensive coordinators, Mike Mularkey running the running game, and then Quinn himself calling it on defense, and new special teams coordinator. A lot of change there. I think they've got a chance to be really good because those defensive guys are back. What level do you see the Panthers defense playing to this year? I think it should be a really good level because I think having Ron Rivera as your play caller helps. How much will Gurley actually be cut back? I don't know. I'm not sure that the Rams know at this point. I think it's going to be sort of a wait and see thing with how his knee is. Worried about the Patriots receivers. Somebody just said Jacoby Myers. I think Jacoby Myers is going to be in the mix. That game he played against the Lions was, my belief is that was significant internally. They really liked what he'd done in camp. I think the big question was, does it carry over into a live game situation? It did. He's got a really good chance to make the team. I mean, I think he might be ahead of N'Keal Harry right now. Of course, N'Keal Harry's in no danger of not making the team, but if they were to line up right now, I'm not so sure that Jakobi Meyers would be on the field, or that Jakobi Meyers wouldn't be on the field before N'Keal Harry. Let's do 10 more questions. Question number one, up or down season for Ben without AB? I think Ben's going to have a really good year, and it's because of the circumstances around him. I think he's motivated, and again, this might be the wrong reason, but I think he's motivated to show people that he was more than just one receiver. Juju, I think, is going to have a really good year. I like their young receivers, Deontay Johnson and James Washington. They've shown a great ability to develop young receivers, and they already dealt with the loss of Le'Veon Bell. He wasn't on the team last year, and so I really like the idea of Ben having a big year in 2019, which is a big reason why I picked the Steelers to win the AFC North. Question number two, will Curtis Samuel have a breakout year? Everything you hear about him there is yes. He's worked his ass off. Tons of time on the jugs machine, tons of time working on his route running. He's sort of moved now from athlete to receiver. And that matters because they won't need to do so many creative things anymore to get plays from him. I think now he can sort of generate plays on his own a little bit more rather than them just finding ways to get him in space and use his athleticism. So yeah, I think Curtis Samuel has a chance to be a breakout player in 2019. Question number three, steel cage match, AB versus Rodgers, who wins? I always go with the crazy guy. AB is the crazy guy. Never underrate craziness in a fight. Question number four, what do we got? Team with the most boom or bust potential, I think Jaguars or Texans, especially without Clowney. Biggest boom or bust potential. That's a good question. Let's go with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And it may be just recency bias because I just saw them. But the Bucs, they've got talent on that roster. The defense was really bad last year. Maybe the whole thing comes undone. But Bruce Arians was really good in Arizona, good the year before he got to Arizona and Indianapolis, and seems like a perfect coach for Jameis Winston. So let's go with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think that was question four, so we'll call that question four. Question five, Bears take a step forward or step back. That all depends on Mitchell Trubisky and how much better he is and how much of a difference Matt Nagy makes for him. The defense, I think, is still going to be really good. It'd be hard for to expect the same sort of performance in back-to-back years. So if you have even a little natural regression going from Vic Fangio to Chuck Pagano, who I think is going to be an excellent defensive coach for them as well, if you have a little natural progression, natural regression, now you got to make up for it somewhere. And I think the one place they make up for it really is in quarterback play. Question number six, Bills is a dark horse wildcard team. You guys know how I feel about Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean, the job they're doing there. So much of that's going to depend on Josh Allen. And the one thing to watch with Josh Allen, talking to him the other night, talking to other people in that organization the other night, I think the big thing is he's taking easy money now. And they're trying to find ways to create easy completions for him. They've got a bunch of guys on that roster who fit that. Cole Beasley's one as a slot receiver. And then all of those running backs that they've got, all those guys have an ability to catch the ball out of the backfield. Question number six, what do you think the Niners record will be? I'll go with 9-7. That's just kind of off the top of my head. I love what they've done on the lines of scrimmage, and I think that'd be a big piece to them taking a step forward. So I think they take the step forward. I also, I'm still a Jimmy G believer. I still think Garoppolo's going to be a really good quarterback, in part because of who Kyle Shanahan is and what Kyle Shanahan does for quarterbacks. Question number seven, OBJ and Landry or Thielen and Diggs? Good question. Good question. OBJ and Landry. I like Thielen and Diggs. I just think the ceiling's a little higher with OBJ and Landry. Question number eight, honest opinion on the pack. Seems like the media overhypes every year now. That's because they got the best quarterback in the game, and a lot of times the assessments that we make are based on the quarterbacks. Aaron Rodgers is still an excellent quarterback, of course. I think this is going to boil down to the relationship between him and Matt LaFleur and how the melding of offensive system and quarterback works. What's so interesting about this one to me, I think the defense is going to be good, and they've got decent pieces around him. What's really interesting about this one to me is you look at a system that's built to make things easier on the quarterback, right? Give the protection calls to the center. Give the quarterback two calls and an easy read so he doesn't have to think too much and he can play fast. Everything's about getting the quarterback playing fast and taking things off his plate. And here's a guy who's had total control running that off. Total control. Now he's running that offense. How do they make those things work? Matt LaFleur, when I've talked to him the last few months, has conceded that's a challenge. They're working on it. I can't wait to see what it looks like. Question number nine, can the Texans take a step forward with that offensive line? Lots of ifs there. And look, they're not the only one. There are other teams that where the offensive line is the swing factor. Like how the season goes depends almost solely on the offensive line. That's Cleveland. That's Cincinnati. That's the Chargers. There's so many teams where the offensive line is going to largely determine how far they can go. The Texans are one of those. Of course, Matt Khalil's health is a factor. What you get at right tackle from Chantrell Henderson, assuming he's there, is a factor. And then the development of the young guys, Titus Howard, Max Sharping, is a factor as well. Final question, question number 10. Brady to San Francisco in free agency. Let's wrap it up right there. I don't think Brady goes to San Francisco in free agency. I don't think Brady goes anywhere. I don't see him in another uniform. I don't think he'd do it. I don't think he wants to do it. I think he's happy to use the threat of doing it to maybe get what he wants contractually. I know he's been upset with the team at points over the course of the last few years. But I don't think he winds up going anywhere else, in large part because even if there's been fracturing in the past of the relationship between Brady and football ops, I still think the relationship with Brady and Kraft and the Kraft family is solid. And honestly, I think that that's a big thing that's going to carry them through. I appreciate you guys coming out. I want to know how much you guys like this format. If you like this format on Periscope, if you like this format in the podcast, please leave me your feedback. I have gotten some pushback on it. It's one of the first things that I've done for the MMQB where there's been like some pushback. So I want you guys to help me make this a better podcast, make this a better Periscope for you guys so I and we can do our best to give you guys exactly what you want with the NFL season here. I can't wait for football to start. College football, pro football, I'm like a kid in the candy store. The season's just a few weeks away. I believe now we've only got 10 days until real football. Miami and Florida kick off the college season. And then, of course, 12 days after that, we got the Bears-Packers season opener. So I want your feedback so we can give you guys the best football coverage during football season. And you know where to get us. You know where to get us. You can get us right here on Periscope. You can also get us on the MMQB NFL podcast feed. We're going to be launching a bunch of new stuff over the course of the next few weeks. But for right now, you can always get our podcast, my podcast right here. You can always get the Monday morning podcast with Gary and Andy right here. And you get the Bad Football Movies podcast right here. We're going to have updates with some of the other stuff that we're going to be doing here in the next couple of weeks. But if you don't see that, you can still just go to the podcast feed and it'll all pop up there for you on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows. At some point next week, I think it'll be on Tuesday after my Big Life event. At some point next week, we'll see you guys then. Or I'll see you guys then with another Periscope, podcast, and all that. Later.